Yeah, yo.
Oh my God.
Oh, I guess they know you, bro.
My name is Daniel. I'm a recovering addict.
Daniel.
You know, I want to thank God for being clean. I'm gonna make sure this thing don't slide off here. I want to thank Chris for asking me to come out and participate. You want me to put it down here, man? In my recovery?
Yeah, let's go for it.
And I don't really know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to figure something out as we go along. I know today I'm real grateful to be clean. And I can tell you one thing. This last month or so, man, I've been like, I'm going to try to get through this without crying, man. You know, I've been like on this emotional roller coaster. You know, you from Great LA, you know, we've lost a lot of people, but I lost my very good friend, Mitzi, which is a guy's wife, and it brought a lot of feelings out of me. So I think what's happening is I've been thinking a lot about my mom again. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'm rolling and I get emotional, so so that's kind of like where I'm at, but 2025 was a very interesting year. When we lost a lot of people. I know the topic is finding your way. I don't know why. But friends had tragedies with the Altadena fires. Then we lost people. Disease is attacking my family. I have a daughter that's now struggling in recovery, and she's trying to get herself. She drank her drugs, so she's trying to get sober. She's doing good now. I think she got about 40 days.
That's right.
Which is good. I'm coming up on, I've been on my job almost 30 years. And I'm coming up on retiring in about 6 months. And that's kind of shocking to me because those that know me, there's a lot of people around here. I had a lot of people in here from my area that saw me when I came in here. So I came in here and I stayed this time in 1990. March the 1st. I came in this time in 1990, March the 1st, after I had got shot 6 times by a guy that I knew. Now, like most of us that grew up in LA, you know, I participated in all those things. You know, gangs and drugs and all of that, right? It had been shot at quite a few times, guy. But I never thought it would be by a guy that I knew. And so, needless to say, I lived through that. And as much as I like to say that was enough, the jarring experience that I needed to make me stop wanting to be a part of the streets, it wasn't. Because I did land. I guess I was trying to find my way.
Yes, sir.
And you know, I was trying to find my way. And so, in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, we have sponsors that's supposed to take us through the work, kind of mentor us, and guide us on the happy road of recovery. Help us to get more in touch with the steps and the spiritual principles that's embodied in those steps. Well, on the streets, you have sponsors too.
Come on.
And their job was to get me embodied in the game.
Yes, sir.
Right. To try to see if I could sell as much dope as I could. To try to do everything they was doing. So I had some real good mentors in the street too. Right? So I thought. Because, well, we talk about being misinformed by misinformed people. Come on. You know, so it wasn't that they was trying to do anything wrong. You know, they was only transmitting what they had, right? And so I just happened to be the one that was transmitting it too. And so I jumped on board, you know, and I got involved in all of that. And, you know, on December of 89, I lived through the 80s. I don't know if you guys ever seen the movie Snowfall.
Yes, sir.
But so we lived, that was us. We lived through Snowfall, if you've seen that movie. If you haven't Googled it, you'll know what I'm talking about. So I survived the 80s. You know, I went to the penitentiary at the end of the 80s. I mean, well, the 80s was like, I started using in the 80s because I graduated from high school in 1980, right? I started using in the early 80s and all the way up into the mid 80s. Then I spent the remainder of the 80s in prison, right? Then I came home from prison and I clinged to my mentors, you know? I clinged to my mentors because I don't know, when you come home from jail, it's like a celebration. Everybody give you a few dollars and they give you what they think is a good idea to help you get on your way, whether it be dope or money, whatever they were doing. So those are the kind of mentors that I had. And so at that time, it was a real good idea to get involved with what they were doing. And so because I was trying to find my way in the dope game and everything else. Well, that worked out. You know, and I've been sharing this for a while because this is only, you know what? I only got one story.
That's right.
You know, and so I got involved with that man for my first 5 years, and I did that. You know, I came to the meetings because I knew I had a problem, you know, but my head told me if you just don't use it, you can sell it. And it worked pretty good for the first 5 years. So, association brings about assimilation, is that what you call it? Right. So I thought I was doing the right thing, man, with the people I was hanging out with. Because I was in my own right. You know, I grew up in South Central LA. That's what they used to call it. Now it's Greater LA, right? But at that time, I wanted to be a success in South Central LA based on what I thought was good game. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, it may make sense to you in a minute, if you see what I'm saying. So if you was getting money selling dope, I wanted to get some money selling dope because that's what looked good to me. Well, I guess I was trying to find my way, right? And so I did that for a little while, and you know, they say that if you hang around the barbershop long enough, see, this is what's so powerful about this fellowship. See. Although I was doing those things, I stayed coming to a meeting. I kept coming to a meeting because see, one thing I was clear on, I couldn't use. And there was a house in my neighborhood that I sold dope at. I smoked dope there and hung out with my homeboys there. And the sister on this program, her mother, bought those houses and turned them into a clean living facility. Men on one side and women on the other side. And I remember pulling up at that meeting. This was my first commitment in Narcotics Anonymous. I pulled up at that meeting. At that time, this was in the 90s, you know, early 90s, because I've been clean almost 36 years. I got clean on March the 1st of 1990. So this might have been like 95. So I was having it my way. And put up at this meeting at that time, you know, in South Central LA, some of the things we like to do is jump around in those cars with hydraulics and stuff on it, right?
Yeah.
And back then I had two real clean Chevys. One was a 54 Chevy Bel Air, and the other one was a 65 Impala Super Sport. With the brains blowed out of it, with two pumps in the front and 100 spokes on it, and I was rolling. I was having it my way. Y'all laughing, y'all can identify, right? And I pulled up at this meeting in that neighborhood where I live, and I had a friend that was at this meeting, and he said, hey man, it was a new meeting. Cosmo was there, and a buddy named Carl P was there. There was a few other people that was there. And it was Cheryl B's house and her mom. And my buddy said, hey man, they need trusted servants. And they nominated me, Juana, to be the secretary. And I looked at Carl and I said, hey man, I can't take this commitment. He's like, why? I said, man, I got 9 ounces of dope in my trunk. Well, I said, I had 9 ounces of dope in my trunk. I had just recopped. I had 9 ounces of rock cocaine in my trunk.
Yeah.
And he said, boom, all you got to do is flush the dope.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I did too.
That's right.
So I kind of looked at him, and I was like, well, you know what? That's what I ain't going to do, homeboy. I'm not going to flush this dope. You know, but this is my truth. I sold all that dope. I sold all of it. I took that commitment. I was selling dope while I had that commitment. But I never recopped.
That's right.
I sold all of that dope and I never recopped. And I got to tell you something. Because see, what I found out since I've been clean is that the disease of addiction manifests itself in all areas of my life. It don't care where. See, right now it's getting me with golf. You know, which is okay. Which is okay. But so I sold all that dope, and you know, back then you still had the beepers and all of that stuff, man. And my beeper was blowing up. It was blowing up. And that was like really one of the. And I've been sharing this for 30 years because that was like one of the hardest things I had to overcome was not copping no more dope. And so I began to lean on you guys and listen to what you were talking about because, you know, you guys was talking about going to school and, you know, and getting, you know, occupations and stuff like that. And now looking back, and I guess this is a good topic because I guess I was trying to find my way because even to this day, one of the things that happens with me, I notice, is that if you say something and I'm in the ears, if I can hear it, I don't even have to be in the conversation. But if it makes sense, I'll automatically try to apply it to my life because it seems like it was a good idea. Mm. And so they was talking about going to school and all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, yeah, I'm going to go to school. So somewhere along the line, I don't know when, I got involved in construction. I think it was a buddy of mine's, I think, had told me about a program called a Century Freeway Program. That's a freeway down in L.A. It's the 105 freeway. It runs east and west. And they were telling me about this program where they were hiring like carpenters and electricians and plumbers and stuff like that. So I had, you know, went over there and got involved with it, man, and I chose the trade of carpentry. And, you know, and the only reason why I chose the trade of carpentry, honestly, because I really didn't know what a carpenter was, Hank. I had no idea. I mean, all I knew was steal, rob, sell dope. But, but I also had a mother and I had a father that raised me in the church. And I knew that Jesus was a carpenter. That was it. I'm telling you, man. That was it. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Plumber, electrician, carpenter. I don't be a carpenter. And because I thought, honestly, I thought a carpenter was somebody who laid carpet on the floor. I can do that. I can lay some carpet. Some carpet. So anyway, I got involved in this trade and I couldn't even read a tape measure. I didn't know what an eighth inch was, a quarter inch, 6.36. I didn't know none of that stuff, man. Anyway, they taught me all of that stuff in the school. I started off as what's called a pre-apprentice. And once again, I'm listening to you guys talk about going to school and stuff like that. And I'm already struggling because, like I was telling you, if you listen to me, you know, the streets was kind of working for me. You know, it was kind of working for me. So I'm struggling with, at this time, now I got this commitment. I'm in recovery. And I'm listening, you know, to you guys talking about going to school and, you know, and I'm struggling about having the money that I was having when I was doing these crimes and stuff like that. And I'm not having it now. And now I got, now I met this cat in recovery and all of you guys, my first sponsor was a little cat named Shorty. And I'm kind of jumping around, but I'm just kind of telling you how it kind of fell into place, you know. And so I met this cat named Shorty, man, and, you know, he was letting me, you know, come to his house and I was talking about, you know, wanting to go do something, what I was comfortable doing, and he was like, you know, just trust the process, and he started taking me through the steps, and he opened up his house on 103rd and Clovis and Watts, and we were sitting on the front porch, man, and, you know, I grew up in the neighborhood where, you know, they flew red colors, and the neighborhood that he in flew blue colors, and I remember I used to go over there on his porch in this low ride, and I'd be like, man, I ain't. He said, man, you with me, you cool. And I would park that low rider in front of his house, and the boys be on that corner gambling. And he's like, "You with me?" And I was like, "Okay." And I worked the process. And I listened to you guys, and I started taking classes at, because I was in this construction and I didn't know a lot about it, so I started taking classes at Los Angeles Trade Technical College down in LA, and I started taking some classes on like blueprint reading and framing and carpentry classes like that. And I was already apprenticed on this job, and you know, my trade was getting better and better and better. And before you knew it, man, I was a real carpenter. You know, before you knew it, man, I was a real carpenter, man. And I finished this program. I was in local 409, and I finished this program about 3 years, and I became a union carpenter for the state of California. And so I started working, and what happened was, you guys, is that, you know, working the steps, going to meetings, having a sponsor, and trusting the process, and taking classes, trying to find my way, my education started getting a little better. And my skill got a little better. And so now, you know, I'm still listening to you guys, not only in the room, but outside of the room. So it was people on my job that was talking about, "Hey, man, have you ever thought about going to Toastmasters?" And I'm like, "What the fuck is Toastmasters, right?" You know, and so I said, "No, I haven't." So it was a journey. It was my supervisor on one of the construction jobs told me, "Hey, man, you should go look into Toastmasters because you seem like you articulate pretty well." And I was crediting that to Narcotics Anonymous because, you know, you have, whether you guys know it or not, when we come up to these lectures, it's like we develop a sense of comfortability from talking in front of people. We don't be real nervous because we used to talking in front of a bunch of fucking dope fiends all the time, so it's like no big deal. And he noticed that I would kind of be a little outspoken on my job, but in a good way. And so I looked into Toastmasters, man, and so what they do is, in Toastmasters, they tell you, they check you on your arms and your eyes and all that shit, right? You know, and add on words and stuff like that. So I started, I'm rusty now, but I started practicing on that a lot. And then I had another guy, once I left construction, because I had said that, because now I'm really in the process, you guys, right? I'm really in the process, I'm trusting the process, I'm working the steps, and I'm not selling drugs, I'm not doing crimes as much. Not selling drugs at all, but not doing crimes as much. And and so, you know, when I got out of construction wearing my bags, I was probably in my 30s. And I mean, you know, one of the other things that I've been blessed to get around here is mental clarity. Because even back then when I was in my 30s, so I always had this kind of nervous energy. I knew that this is the kind of shit I don't want to do in my 60s. So I started saying, the first opportunities I get to get out of these bags, I'm going to do it. And so I started going to Toastmasters, and I started taking some other interviews for some jobs that did require me to wear my bags, Chris. And the first thing smoking, I got it, and I got hired. And then when I got on that job, man, it just flourished. It just flourished. And I just kept going up in this job. And I got up to a position in this current career that I'm in now where I don't do much. And I make real decent money. And I'm going to retire from that job in 6 months. And now, I didn't mention this, but I did mention getting out in the late 80s and being in jail at the last half. So when I came home, I was D42956. Y'all looking like y'all don't know what that means. No, let me say what it means. I was D42956. And I never thought about, just listen to you guys, I never thought about trying to get my record expunged or get it closed or nothing like that, because what this process did for me is it opened up doors that I had no idea could open up for me without my record being sealed. Mm-hmm. With me telling the truth on those applications. They hired me. And I told them everything. And so anyway, I got the job, I'm in a position now where I'm getting ready to retire, and somebody around here told me, just listen, he said, hey man, you ever thought about getting your record expunged? And I was like, not really, because I've gotten everything I wanted without getting it expunged. So anyway, I took his advice, I got my record, what's called a certificate of rehabilitation. That put me in a position to get a certificate, not a certificate, a full pardon, which I've yet to get, but I'm believing that I will get that. And if you get a full pardon, that means that it's like you've never been to jail, right? Now, sometimes I have to pinch myself because sometimes I can't really believe that this program has done as much as it's done for me. You know, staying in the middle of the herd. Let me tell you what staying in the middle of the herd. It'll change your play. You know, they say you only have to change one thing, right?
Everything.
Yeah, everything. They also said you have to change your playmates, your playgrounds, and your playthings. So I did that. You know, as a result of my friend who I told you, which is Guy's wife, when I first got out of prison, she was like one of the first people I met in Narcotics Anonymous. Really, I was at an all-fellowship picnic.
Right.
We used to have all-fellowship picnics. The drunks right. could come in with us.
Right.
It was a good picnic. It was good. We had fun, right? You know?
Yes,
and I still have a lot of my friends still. You know, we all good, right? And so I was at this picnic, and I bought two tickets. And both of the tickets won. I won the best two prizes. I said, oh, this is my friend right here forever. And now, I've said that story before. Now, the reason why I said that story, because as a result of meeting her, I met her wonderful husband. I met Jay. I met Dwayne. I met all these other guys, which changed my playmates and my playgrounds and my plaything, because in and of myself, I wouldn't have started going to conventions out of state. You understand what I'm saying? I wouldn't start going to conventions in Detroit, in D.C., in Hawaii, in Texas, if it wouldn't have been for them guys.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying? Staying in the middle of the horde has given me some rewards, man, that's priceless.
That's right.
You know, and as a result of that, I've accumulated a bunch of friends in Narcotics Anonymous, man. It's like, you know, it's like Cheers. You know, when you walk in the room, everybody know your name. That's a real good feeling, man. You know, because if you was like me, you know, when they seen Boom coming, here he come. Hide the dope, close the dope. Let me just see. So just so I can qualify for y'all, let me just jump back.
Come on, boy.
Let me just jump back so y'all really will know. Cause see, right now I might look like Tiger Hood up here.
Stop it! Stop it!
That's how good God is, right? Let me tell you, what my day consists of today.
Come on.
Because I don't never rehearse nothing, right? But today, my biggest dilemma was, is man, I'm like, how am I going to make a par or a bogey? That's all I was thinking about all day. Like, damn. Right. I hit one shot, right, on a par five. I'm going to get out of this golf, right? But I'm going to get back to the qualifier. I hit this one shot, man. It was about almost 500 out. I got on the green in two shots.
Right.
You get five shots to get the ball in the hole.
Right.
I'm on it too.
You get the shit out of that.
I get a bogey. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Now, if you don't understand golf, those that understand golf know that's something crazy, right?
Yes, it is.
You get five shots to get on the green. I'm on it too. Now you putting.
Right.
That means I put it full time. So now,
wow.
I said that to say that if that's my only problem today, I'm batting a thousand.
Right.
Now let me get back to tell y'all how I got here real quick. See, it wasn't always about me trying to be Tiger Hood, right? In my lowest, and I have never forgot this, and they said if you don't forget your past, you never have to repeat it. I remember being in the neighborhood when I no longer had the heart or the courage to use the pistol to take some dope, to taking the gun to the dope lady to sell it. I said dope lady to sell her that gun. And then when she didn't, when she bought the gun for a little bit of money, I went back and asked. It's two kind of people they call in L.A. One is a raspberry, and the other one is a strawberry.
Come on, man.
What happened? Shut up. My disease had to... I'm qualified. My disease had took me to... want to be a raspberry. Because I said, I looked at it as humbly as I could. Just like I'm looking at you, Carol. I looked at it and I said, baby, is there something I could do for you? And she looked at me and said, boy, if you don't get your ass out of here. See, that's when I knew I had a problem. That was one of the times I knew I had a problem. Another time I knew I had a problem, I had a 67 Volkswagen, clean. Had 125, was 125, I think it was 125 on the front, 130, whatever, 165 on the back, it was clean, right? Pull back top, all that, right? And I remember, and I started smoking. So first I sold the music out the car. Now I want you to stay with this timeline. So now this is in the early 80s. I didn't see people selling their cars in the early 80s. Now I think they might have been, but I didn't see nobody selling their cars, right? First I sold the music, then I sold some other stuff out the car, and then out of nowhere, I don't know where I can, some said, sell a car.
Just out of nowhere,
and I hadn't seen nobody sell a car, not in my neighborhood. If they did, I didn't know about it, right? I sold that car to the dope man, right? Then I went back to my mom's house after I smoked up that dope. The next morning I woke up, I was sitting on the front porch, and I seen that Volkswagen drive past the door. I said, boy, you got a problem. You got a problem. Now, I got almost 36 years clean, and I still remember that.
Yes,
I still remember that. That's what keeps me grounded in Archives Anonymous. I'm gonna tell you something. Ain't nothing and nobody running me out this motherfucker. You gotta be a part of the no matter what crew. You know, I lost my mama in 2012, broke my heart. She prayed me up in these rooms. I thought I never had a problem with high blood pressure. The doctor said, man, your pressure is high. I'm like, what's going on? I was so stressed out when my mama told me she had. But I went to the doctor with my mother, and they diagnosed her with pancreatic cancer. And if you know anything about pancreatic cancer, it's a real aggressive cancer.
Yes, it is.
And so it was like we didn't really get a chance to process it. Kind of like, and I think that's why I'm like with Mitzi. It's like it's kind of, I didn't really get a chance to really process the shit. It was like, she gonna die in 9 months. I'm like, what the fuck? And I just, and I was like that one of the higher parts of my recovery, getting clean for my mother, because my mother came and gave me a cake for 24 years. Every year, she came and gave me a cake, because she was so proud of what I had become because of you guys. She was so proud of what you guys did with her son's life, honestly. You know, so I stand before you as a proud member of Narcotics Anonymous, man. And I'm telling you, this program works. Because if you was listening to what I just said, it's no way in the world I'd have thought my life, man, my life is sweet as bear meat. I ain't never ate no bear meat, but I heard it's pretty damn sweet. I'm telling you, my life is sweet, man. My biggest problem is, why the hell did I not get a damn eagle putting balls?
Right.
I'm doing pretty good. You get what I'm saying? And so a lot of other stuff that has happened, you know, in recovery, because let me tell you something, if you knew, I'm going to tell you something, you know, everything is not going to be a bed of roses. You know, I shared about my daughter now struggling with her alcoholism and stuff, but she's trying to get it together, man. You know, I got a son that's, I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know what's wrong with him. But I love him. You know, now some good stuff that's going on, and I know that this wouldn't, you know, if I see, it's a lot of stuff that probably wouldn't happen if you get, if you don't get clean. Let's, if you miss it in action, you miss a lot of stuff. See, a lot of us around here have missed our parents dying. We have missed our friends. We've missed a lot of things because we were stuck in the disease of addiction. So I always equate recovery to the things that I've been afforded to be a part of, had I not stayed clean. So now, this week, yesterday, I got an 18-year-old grandson, man, that when my daughter came home and told me she was going to have him, I was proud of her. My wife was a little like, you scared, you know, his first child, whatever. But I was cool. She just kept the baby, you know. And now he's 18. He's 6'3". He just flew out to Oklahoma. He's going to be an Oklahoma Sooner wide receiver for Oklahoma, man. You know, he left. He got a chance to leave early because he pulled his grades up, and he's gone, man. You know, I mean, that's some of the rewards that I've been afforded to get for staying clean. You know, I went back to school and further my education, man. I got my associates, then I got my bachelor's. You know, I graduated in 2021 and 50-something years old, man. You know, like I say, I'm getting ready to retire off a job, man. You know, when I walk into places, see, I talked about Cheers, right? So here's another thing, you know, here's another thing that I've noticed about me as I'm finding my way. This is funny, Chris. It's like, I'm really a people person. You know, and I found out that the gift of recovery follows you everywhere you go. Mm. Because I, you know, and I'm a creature of habit. I'm a real structured kind of person. And it's like, and I don't know if that came from doing a little time. Because, you know, Roy, you know, you got to get up and make your bed up. You get a 115 or 128 if you don't make your bed up. So, you know, you got to get up. Me and Roy, well, I ain't going to break blood, you know, with him. Well, hey, look, anyway, me and Roy, we had to get up and hike mountains and shit. You know what I'm saying? And run every morning. You know, we got to, you know, just discipline. You had to, or you're going to get written up. You know what I mean? So the institutions instill some systematic program in me that I've been able to keep going on and on in my life now, right? So structure, without structure, I'm nothing. I have to take my plan everywhere. I can't operate without structure. And as a result of that, man, I go to the gym 5 days a week. You know, I play golf as much as I can, you know. I mean, I do. You know, I believe that, you know, the program of Narcotics Anonymous didn't just get us clean to just be clean. Mm. That's right. I believe that you have to invest in yourself. That's right. You know, and that's what I do. You know, people that know me from back in the day sometimes are amazed at the changes they see in me. They are amazed that the rage is gone. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? The rage is no longer there. Now, how I equate alleviating the rage in my life, and I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna give you a secret, and I'm gonna tell you what worked for me. You believe me or not? See, the 11th step talks about it through prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation. So at the height of the pandemic, man, you know, I went through a little ordeal, and I was introduced to meditation. You know, a guided kind of meditation, but I started applying it to my life, and what I saw was, because they say it's a practice, right? And I used to be like, man, what the hell do just sitting quiet, not saying, what is that going to really do for me? And I thought it wasn't working, but if you heard me, I'm very systematic. So even though I thought it wasn't working, I kept practicing it. Because every morning, I read the Just for the Day, I go to Conscious Contact, I listen to guided meditation, I listen to a Bible app, every day, like clockwork, because it's just routine for me. So it's just what I do, right? So then some stuff started happening where I really saw how the 11th step is very effective in my life. So stuff started happening, like people start cussing me out real aggressively. Real bad.
Real aggressive.
Now,
real bad.
I may look like I'm not aggressive at 63 years old. But I've had my challenges.
Yeah.
I've had my challenges, right? So anyway, this one particular time, my nephew got real aggressive with me. Real aggressive, real verbally abusive. Now, to his credit, he was on the phone. But you know, even on the phone, we could trip out, right? So I noticed after he went off on me, Joanna, and he did what he did, this was the first sign when I knew something was changing with my emotional intelligence. I knew something was different going on with me, Matt, because I didn't feel that, like, I didn't feel it. I just listened to him. And I said, hey, man, thanks for letting me know how you feel. You take care of yourself.
I was like, damn.
Did I do that? And then I didn't, I don't know if you could identify, I didn't have that after fact feeling, like this conversation with myself about what I should have said and what I should have do and what I'm going to do to this fool when I see him. I didn't have none of that. You know, it was cool, right?
Right.
You know, it was cool. And I talk to myself a lot. Just so you know, I talk to myself a lot. Because a lot of times when I'm in the house, and you know, we're having a conversation, you know. Okay. A lot of times when I'm in the house and we're having a conversation, I'm talking about myself and me. Yeah. So when me and myself are having conversations, sometimes the conversation comes out of my mouth. Where you can hear it, and you might be in the room. So every now and then, somebody will interrupt and say, who you talking to? And I have to tell them, me and myself, and why you interrupting our conversation? I don't interrupt y'all conversation. But, I don't know, man. I'm not going to step into it. So I saw it was a sign for Chris. I don't know if I said anything or not, man, but I can tell you this much. I know what I've done is I've stood up here and shown you a miracle. Mm. And I've shown you that this program works, man. I've shown you that, you know, consistency is a key. Meeting makers make it. Stay in the middle of the herd. You know, this program changed my life. I'm forever grateful, man, because I really never saw this coming, man. And we're going to lose people. We're going to gain people. Newcomers, get you some people you can hang with. Find your crew, find your herds. You know, I mean, they call it cliques. You can call it whatever you want, man. Whatever's gonna keep you clean, keep you clean. I don't know. I came around here in the 90s, man. You know, there was a lot of stuff that kept me clean. You know, the girls, the dances, sex, whatever it was, it kept me coming back. You know, and I tell you something, man. Back when I got clean, and as a lot of y'all probably got clean before me, and we used to say this in the street, we had a pretty good crew. And I still got a pretty good crew. You know, we do a lot of things even now together, go to football games, hang out, man, you know, even with the Gray. Shit, Gray Walkers, with all that shit, we still moving, you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's all good, man. You know, you find your crew. You find your herd, man, and believe me, this process works, man. So I don't have nothing else to say, but I do want to say this. I want to thank you, Chris, again, for allowing me to come out and speak. And I hope I said something.
You did.
I hope I said something to help somebody else stay clean. Thanks for letting me share. Wow.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man. Hey, give Daniel another round. Appreciate you. Appreciate it. You did it. I appreciate it. All right. I've asked Irene to come up and read just for today, and then we'll pray out. She's going to close us out with the third step prayer after we do our best to circle up.
My
name is
Irene. I'm an addict.
Irene.
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I fall that way, I have nothing to fear. After a moment of silence for the addicts still suffering in Navi's rooms and family members and children and animals caught in the crossfire, please join me in the third step prayer.
Animals?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You killed me with that one, bro. Damn. A two?
Man.
You know that dude, bro? You know if we got play golf?
I did not. Putting one work in.
Yeah. Grab somebody.
Let this circle represent what we cannot do alone, we can surely do together. Many of us have said,
take my will of my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live, lead, keep coming back, it works and you work it.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.